Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
And you're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing. A very special show coming up for you because we have Aidan O'Brien coming your way in about 10 minutes' time. In the meantime, you're going to have to make do with myself and Johnny Ward. Johnny, how are you?
How are you, Ger?
You said you had an apology. What was that about?
Yeah, what did I text you before the show?
I'm going to be late.
Before that?
Give me a tip for the National.
What was your tip for the National?
My original tip was Tiger Roll. You know, we love Tiger Roll around these ways. Landed a giant double for us at Cheltenham a couple of years back.
Yeah, so I was in the Racing Post offices before I came here. That's why I was running a bit late. And they had 40 little cupcakes that all had the colours of one of the Grand National horses for tomorrow.
Okay, yeah.
So I was going to bring over my selection and I was going to bring over your selection.
I went for doing the cost in the end because you said I couldn't get the Tiger Roll.
So I was going to produce the two of them kind of live for our video today. And the first problem was somebody had eaten my selection and somebody had also eaten your selection. So then I said, what's your second pick in the race? So I got that and picked up the cupcake and I brought my second pick in the race, picked up the cupcake, rushed over here having put them in my bag. And when I picked them out of my bag, they looked like a half-eaten silage pit at this stage. So we basically don't have any buns. But, you know, as Jim said in the Royal Family when he offered to make Barbara the dinner and then he went to the feathers instead, it's the thought that counts.
It's the thought that counts.
Sorry about that.
How are you getting on?
Not too bad, yeah. I'm backing loads of Aintree winners. Problem is, I backed them at Cheltenham. Three horses have won already, I backed to Cheltenham. Very frustrating. Aintree's always a bit like the second day of a wedding. You're just not sure the wedding day form is going to back up and it wasn't the original plan. It's kind of like a hangers-on type festival and it's a bit like that. But looking forward to Aidan, looking forward to the National.
Yeah, OK. Why has Aintree been so difficult to predict what's going to happen?
I think...
Stuff like Super Sunday winning when...
Yeah, like, so I backed Super Sunday finishing the first five at Cheltenham in accumulator. He cost me a lot of money, but he didn't get the trip. But horses are not really trained for Aintree unless it's a Grand National or unless they're not good enough to run at Cheltenham. They're trained for Cheltenham. And then, like, you have 3 weeks between Aintree and Cheltenham. So if you train a horse to peak for Cheltenham, 3 weeks later, you can't gun the horse in the 3 weeks prior to that, as Aidan will probably tell you. So you're kind of slightly in the dark as to what sort of form he's going to produce because this wasn't really the original plan. So you do get kind of some strange results. We obviously had Top of the Game beaten in the last race there. We had some strange enough results yesterday as well. But the national is, I think this year is a really good National, I have to say. Like, just the whole Tiger Roll story, he's such an unlikely hero. And we've three of the greatest jockeys we've ever had who turn 40 or have turned 40 this year riding in the race, and I would suspect one of them won't be riding in it again. I'm just not sure which one.
Yeah, so you're talking Ruby,
Davey and Barry Gertie.
Okay.
And Richard Johnson, who's 41, bidding to win the race for the first time and rock the Casbah. So you have two lady riders in the race. Woman has never ridden a winner of the National. So I think there are so many stories and hopefully maybe one of them will come true.
All right, I'm going to just tell everybody about this big show we have coming up first before we get into talking about the National in a bit more detail and a bit more about some of the news stories that have been happening. We have a massive show coming your way later this month. It's in advance of Punchestown. Ruby Walsh is going to join us live and in Technicolor in the Alex Hotel in Dublin on Wednesday, the 24th of April, as we preview the grand finale of the jump season. It's the Punchestown Festival. 39 races, 12 grade ones, £3 million quid in prize money. It's going to be great. You can get your tickets for that show now. It's a live show. You can come to the show. Yeah, head over to offtheball.com and stay listening over the next few days because we will be announcing some more very special guests. It's the Punchestown Festival preview on, the Punchestown Festival, obviously the 30th of April to the 4th of May. Our preview is on the 24th of April in the Alex Hotel. And the tickets for our racing shows always go really quick because they're great. Punchestown, it's your kind of town. Punchestown.com.
It's not really a town though, is it? It's more of a field, Punchestown. Is it a little village?
Their tagline, don't be going...
Punchestown is going to be absolutely class this year. We might have Sam Crow, we might have the likes of Saldia, we've all these Rich Ritchie horses that haven't run, and a horse that didn't go to Cheltenham could definitely show up there, and a horse who didn't go to Aintree. Without bigging it up, it's going to be pretty spectacular, Punchestown. And Nicky Henderson didn't run a couple of big, big key horses at Aintree, and everyone is like, ooh, Santini and Altior, I wonder, could they actually rock up at Punchestown, which would be, and Nicky loves Punchestown. So,
yeah,
you know, it's going to be a hell of a festival.
It wasn't always as season-ending defining as it is now. It's been an accumulation of loads of good horses. I guess it's kind of part of the boom in Irish racing over the last decade or so.
And it's prize money as well. That's part of it. You know, it's excellent prize money. And, you know, if things didn't maybe go right for you in terms of Cheltenham or Aintree, this gives you a chance to kind of set the record straight. Prize money's so good, and you know, a lot of the English like coming over here and just having a party as well.
Yeah, getting some euros in their pockets. in advance of whatever has gone on with Brexit by that stage. Oh. Might be important. Let's talk a little bit about the National. Why does a race like this take over the public's consciousness over a century the way it has done?
I don't know, really.
Why does this survive when loads of other races and race meetings haven't quite stayed at the same level?
Yeah, like it's survived, it's prospered, it's become a different race in the sense that the BHA, I think they've done a good job. I criticise the BHA enough, but I think it has done a good job in changing the fences. It's become a classier race. Like Tiger Roll wouldn't have had a hope in this race 20 years ago. He wouldn't get round, simple as that. But it's just the madcap nature of it. And it's, I suppose it's an exhilarating visual quandary for people who are watching it on TV, and it's got that Saturday afternoon billing, spring going into the summer, and great stories as well in the race. And it's just horses jumping fences that high, so many of them falling. It can be a bit of a grisly spectacle, but it's never waned in terms of, you know, the public kind of affair with it. And it's funny, I think it's the worst race you can have a bet on basically pretty much all year, but it's the most popular race of them all for a bet.
Yeah.
Such is life.
And the festival they've put around has definitely improved in recent years as well.
Yeah.
When we were kids, the whole notion of there being other days to entry, I mean, I don't know even if they had them, but they certainly wasn't publicised.
Yeah, it's strange because, I mean, if you looked at some of the races yesterday, they were nearly right up there with Cheltenham, yet there's no real hype about it. It's just entry doesn't do it except for the Grand National. It's like, a lot of people would forget to tell you the winners of the Grade Ones at Aintree last year, but they'd never forget the Cheltenham ones. It just has that kind of, as I said, the second day of a wedding feeling about it, where you're just kind of not as up for it at all as you were for the first. But the National is still, I mean, the prize money now, £1 million or whatever it is, it's an incredibly lucrative race, and a race that's been very good to the Irish really in recent years after a fairly poor spell, and I think we'll win it this year as well.
Yeah, who are you picking?
I'm going with Annabelle Fly. He was second in the Gold Cup. I'm not sure, you know, the second day of a wedding kind of syndrome. Annabelle Fly wasn't really trained for the Grand National, and it's how he comes out of a grueling race in the Gold Cup. It's hard to predict that. I think Tony Martin is very pleased with how he is at home, but he was fourth in the race last year. He ran really well. It didn't really go to plan for him. Rathvinden as well for Ruby Walsh, an 11-year-old. He must have a very solid chance. A lot of people will back Tiger Roll, but Christ almighty, you've got to get better 7-2 shots than anyone in the Grand National, really.
It's too short.
It's crazy short. He's £9 higher than last year. I watched the race back as well. Like, he was very nearly brought down last year. What's to say something won't go wrong? Eddie O'Leary was talking to this morning. He said he's an absolutely ridiculous price. Now, he would play it down, but I think he's very, very short.
Yeah. So it's not that you're opposing him. It's not that you think he's going to get beaten. It's just that you think there's better value.
I mean, would I back him? I'm not sure I'd back him at 7-1, really, if I didn't know the odds before the race. You know, it's a race where you really should be getting 7 or 8-1 the field. Annabelle Fly is double figures. A couple of others, like Gordon Elliott, could definitely spring a surprise. The likes of Dooney Cost, Mala Beach. You know, Pleasant Company second in the race last year. He can't be underestimated.
Isn't it the type of race that where the experience of getting around and being successful is something that you kind of certainly to run into a place?
Absolutely.
A horse that finished second last year is good odds.
Absolutely. It's just like he came into the race under a bit of a cloud last year. It's the same this year. He's definitely been prepared for the race, but he's also gone up in the weights, and you know that's a bit of a concern. But if you're basically backing a horse you think is going to be held up in the field, you need an awful lot to go right, because horses invariably are going to fall in front of you, even if they unseat, even if they collide with anything else. You are kind of a hostage to a bit of luck in the race. So the horses, like you look at One for Arthur coming back 2 years after he won the race, he's unseated both his starts this season. He's jumping, looks a little bit suspect, but he gets into a rhythm all of a sudden, you think he's going to win it again. It's a race to enjoy, but I've never backed the winner in it, and I don't expect to back the winner in it tomorrow, being honest with you.
Okay, I'm just looking here at the list of Gordon Elliott horses that we have. So Davy Russell is on Tiger Roll, Keith Donoghue rides Outlander, Paddy Mullins is on Dom Poli, Jamie Codd rides Mala Beach, Dooney Cost is Jack Kennedy, Dennis O'Regan rides Atwaffville, and Noble Endeavour is Mark Enright. Would you be surprised if any of them were good enough for an attack?
A lot of them fall into the kind of had a lot of class and maybe kind of on the wane. I think Mala Beach could surprise. I know he's plenty of weight, but he's a classy horse, and Jamie Codd has gone very close in this race before. It should be mentioned as well, Outlander and Don Poli, who've won 6 Grade Ones between them for Jigginstown. I actually thought it'd be more than that, but horses that have won over 7 figures in prize money for them. They're both sold on yesterday.
Okay, yeah.
And they scooped an accumulative, I think it was 335 grand. which is really crazy, crazy money. It just shows if you're very wealthy and you want a runner in the Grand National, you can literally buy the horse on the Thursday and then run him on the Saturday. But if one of them were to win, he'll make us look like idiots, because the owners look like they have money to burn to be buying horses of that age for that sort of money, who basically seem to have lost their way.
Yeah, but then they romp home and happy days, you double down. Right, a reminder, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by GoRacing.ie. We've been working on a documentary about the jockey Gary Halpin from Blanchardstown. It's all about his unlikely beginnings and how he's making his way in the world of racing. The full film is going to go live on our social channels tomorrow, but just first, here's a little 30-second teaser for you. This is Gary's parents reminiscing about how their son fell in love with racing at a young age.
I actually still have all them letters. And you crying, one, I'm not go back to school.
Sure, obviously I didn't want to go back to school, but sure, look, we won't talk about that.
Yeah, that full documentary is coming your way tomorrow afternoon on all of our social channels. Now, let's go live to Ballydoyle and say a very good afternoon to Aidan O'Brien. Aidan, how are you doing? Thanks for talking to us.
Your pleasure, Ger. How are you?
Yeah, great. Listen, thanks a million for it. We were just chatting a little bit earlier on about some of the stuff we'd like to talk to you about. And this time of year, we've had so many of the flat racing fraternity in, and there's just a sense in spring when everything is possible. All of your two-year-olds could go on to become absolutely sensational horses. It must be the best, kind of most exciting part of the year for you guys.
Yeah, no, thanks, Ger. No, it is. Obviously, everything is doing everything within themselves and very comfortable at this stage. So obviously you're dreaming a lot about a lot of horses. So it is a good, great time, really.
Do you begin to see patterns emerge from year to year where you can kind of pin, even early on before you start doing the hard work with the horses, that you kind of put them in buckets going, okay, you're going to be a sprinter, you've got a bit of stamina, and I think you're going to come good later in the year. How do you kind of judge the horses at this stage?
Yeah, no, I suppose obviously the three-year-olds, we would have had a little idea what they were doing last year. And I suppose the two-year-olds, you're starting off with the sharp bred horses and physical types at this time of the year that are more mature. So I suppose it's all different with them all, but there would be a pattern from year to year, really.
And the work that you do with each of the different types of horses, is it significantly different if you've got a stamina horse or a sprinter?
I suppose there is. Obviously, this time of the year with two-year-olds, they're usually fast enough horses. I suppose then the classic horses are trained more or less the same, because they could be milers, or they could be mile and a half horses, really, and they could stretch out to a mile and six at the end.
Would the mild winter as well, Aidan, would that have any difference this year? Because it was so ridiculously mild and there wasn't much frost. Would that have had any effect in terms of, I suppose, your horses where they are for the spring?
Yeah, no, I think, Johnny, I think it has been a help. I suppose the last 3 weeks have been a big change, but the winter was good. We've been happy with our horses. Obviously, when we ran them at Leopardstown, we felt after the race that a lot of them were going to improve plenty from their runs. But we were happy. They had done more grass work this year than last year, because the winter was probably heavier and softer last year. But it's always an advantage, really, when it is mild.
Is there a template for mile horses that you've kind of honed down over the years, that, you know, you start out and you're kind of going, okay, this is how I think I'm going to train this mile horse, and this is how I'm going to train this mile and a half horse? Is it just kind of second nature to you now at this stage, given the amount of experience you have?
I suppose every horse is different. And just because they're a stayer or a sprinter, it mightn't necessarily mean like that's the way they would want to be trained. I suppose every horse is different. Some take a lot of work, some take very little work. Some take distance work, some take short work. So I suppose they're all different, really. And it's to try and work them out kind of fairly quickly, really, I suppose, is what we try and do.
As well as, I suppose, any time I was down in Ballydoyle, it's just the calibre of your work riders. To have those, a bit like Gordon Elliott, how he delegates responsibility. And I know you mentioned people after race to look after horses, but where would you be without those work riders?
I know, absolutely. Johnny, obviously, as everybody knows, it's a big team effort here, and we just feel very privileged to be part of the team. We're very lucky to have an awful lot of very special people here, riders and yard people, grounds people, you know, so that's what makes it happen, really.
How much of a joy is it to have Dunica for another year as well?
Yeah, no, it's good. Obviously delighted. He's a massive help to us. He did 9 stone the other day in Navan, which was great. So really delighted, Johnny, really.
Are you, just in terms of the data points that you're looking for from a horse at various stages of the season, are you working with stopwatches and saying, okay, this is a good time, or is it purely visual to see how the horse is responding when you put him under pressure and you ask him for a little bit of extra, I'm talking about training now.
You know, I think it's a little bit of everything, really. Like all the data is collected, the times and the heart and the bloods, everything about them, their weight, but visually. So it's all kind of part of the mix, I think, and it's all information, and information is always a help.
And did you get better at interpreting that data, or was that always something? Because it's not like there's a sudden burst of late success that you kind of go, okay, you've peaked as a trainer. Your success has been very, very consistent from the very get-go. So obviously, initially, when you probably didn't have all that data, you were still doing a lot of the things you're doing now. You're kind of layering on the information and the extra science as you go.
Yeah, no, I suppose obviously new things come on board and we try all the new things. Like I said, it's information, and it's information for everybody else as well. Any information we think we can collect, we collect it. And then when we go start making decisions, if we need to go for it, it's there. I think everyone has to move forward when you can collect information and there's a way of doing it. It doesn't have to control you, but it's always a help to have it if you do need it.
Yeah, because we talk about this in all sports, and we're kind of fascinated by the people who are successful, particularly now when you've got the ability to monitor the amount of protein in the diet, the amount of fluids, the whatever blood metrics you're taking and analysing and spitting through the science. But sometimes that can be overwhelming if you don't already have a clear vision of what it is you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, no, I think so. It's like what you said, you have a feeling, and obviously visually it is very important. And then it's great to have the other information to go on if you want to make a decision, or if you're in a corner or you're looking for something else to push you one way or the other. You don't have to do it, but it's great to have it there if you do need it.
Yeah, and just I suppose you have a bit of a milestone this year in terms of the age, but are you as hungry as ever in terms of that joy you have in the spring when the season is coming? I know Kevin Prendergast is 86, so he's a few years in you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Sure, Kevin is an unbelievable man. And obviously this time of the year it's an exciting time, really. You're dreaming about every horse, really. You have to get them through the winter, and they're after doing all their winter program, and then the work starts building up and getting quicker and faster. And then you just hope that you have enough winter work done to carry them through, and that they stay in one piece, really.
You did change as a trainer a bit in that, or at least I'm claiming you did, because earlier on, when I started following racing, you used to always farm that 5-year-old, 2-year-old maiden at 5-year furlong, 2-year-old maiden at the Curragh. But then later on, you kind of seemed to take a more, as the season progresses, approach with your horses.
Yeah, I suppose, Johnny, we have a different class or different quality horse now. And
more Galileos.
And they're horses that might carry on a bit longer through the season. Mm. When we started off first, they had to get out there and do it early before the high-class horses came out. So I suppose it all depending on the horses that you have, really. So I suppose we're going a little bit more gentle this year or the last few years. And we give them time to progress up through it rather than having them running first time like it's their last run ever, really.
I always find this time you're very excited in terms of what stallions you're looking out for, and what are your sort of, have you any young stallions that we should be keeping an eye out for this year that have their first 2-year-olds?
Yeah, no, sure. Listen, I suppose Glen Eagles is the one this year, is first season sire and American Pharaoh. So like we're very excited with both of them, very happy with them, and both of them have plenty early looking horses. Mm. Like what we see of both of them at the moment, you would have to be happy.
What do you see in the American Pharaohs?
Yeah, no, they're plenty speed, which is, I suppose he got the classic trip. He did it all the way up to a mile and a half in America, which was, but his stock seemed to have plenty pace. They're good minds and they're good movers. You couldn't be happier with what they're doing at the moment.
I suppose just to start looking at the season ahead, how exciting is 10 Sovereigns? He's obviously leading fancy for the Guineas, and could he get the mile? I know Dunica was kind of suggesting to me that he's so fast he might not.
Yeah, no, like obviously you won't really know until you do it, but there's a good chance that he could. He's very relaxed. He's going through his work very relaxed. He's not panicking or wanting to get anything over and done with quickly or anything. You'd have to be very happy with what we're seeing at the moment. Obviously, as we get closer to the guineas, we will know more every single day. But at the moment, you would be very happy.
There's something about his stride at the end of his races that just seems to me to mark him out as a little bit different.
He's a very big, easy mover. He's a great capacity. He goes along in second gear, and that's the way he was at two. And he always, at two, the last day he ran when Dunica really wanted him, he did knuckle down for him, which was a great sign, really.
Is the ability to say that you don't need them to be running the first race of the season like it's going to be their last ever, is that something that comes with time and experience and just the confidence to go, okay, we can, you know, we're going to plot this now, we've seen the rhythm of the year over a long enough period to go, we don't need to be the big bang start, that actually we'll still hopefully be racing horses in September, October around the world?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's the approach we have taken the last few years, and everybody gives everybody the confidence to do that. And like the year is long, and with those 2-year-olds that are starting now, you're hoping that Ascot is where they'll be ending up. And then if they're good, they'll go on to the end of the year from there. So it is a long game, and there's a lot of races to take part in between now and the end of the year. So I suppose if you're too hard on them now, you might not make that far.
In terms of physicality, Magna Grecia would have obviously impressed a lot as a 2-year-old.
What do you expect the difference between a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old to be? Like, what is it?
It's kind of physically like some, like we had Patrick Prendergast here about Skitter Scatter, and she's not very big. So basically, it's a bit like a minor footballer. You know, I suppose humans grow till they're 21 or whatever like that. Supposedly, if you're a small minor footballer, you're probably going to be handicapped as a senior footballer. But that's definitely accentuated in terms of horses, because you're going to be taking on bigger horses. And generally, Galileos are just bred to be 3-year-olds. They're bred to come into their own. And Magna Grecia physically is certainly designed to come into his own. Whereas some horses are sharp and they're more likely to be fast 2-year-olds may not train on.
Okay, basically. So you hope that the horses progress, but you can't guarantee that they're, like, obviously the bloodline suggests that this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I guess when you're training them, that's as unknown a quantity in some ways. Not quite as unknown,
yeah,
because you've got some benchmarks that you're operating against from the previous season. And
yeah, like I think Aidan, in fairness, would say that he is, and he never, you know, fails to mention, but the influence of Galileo, and you can nearly set your watch by Galileo horses. They're hardy, they want to win, they train on, and they're generally very good. And a lot of them win derbies and oaks and guineas and so on and so forth, including Glen Eagles, who he referenced there as an exciting first season stallion. And Aidan had obviously the saddler as well as bloodline into Galileo, and you know, Galileo has been the mainstay of the Ballydoyle operation for years now. And you know, I think in terms of the legacy that Galileo will leave, it'll be up there with the legacy that Aidan will leave.
Okay.
We'll in terms of their sons and daughters as well, you know, that should be mentioned.
Yeah. We'll go back to Aidan O'Brien as soon as we can re-establish some contact with him. We may as well look forward to the racing in Ireland here this weekend. We'll talk again a little bit about the National, just to recap exactly where we were. We're talking about Guineas trial stakes, really.
Yeah, like obviously it would be nice to get Aidan back for this, and hopefully he will be able to shine some light on his runners, because his runners this time of year, I find, are generally they do come on for a run, and that's because they're basically trained to have a long year. It's a long year until November.
Yeah.
And I've no issue with that. You can't have a horse fully ripe every day of the week. But there's no doubt the main narrative this weekend is Kevin Prendergast. You know, we should be very proud of this in racing. Fell in his mid-80s having a horse who he thinks could win a classic. He won his first Irish 2000 guineas with a horse 40 years before he won his second with Autad, and he thinks Mad Moon, who runs in the 210, the Guineas trial tomorrow, he thinks he could be better than Autad, and he's probably going to be a favourite tomorrow. All the vibes are very strong about him, and you know, we can be a bit soppy about people who are older, and you know, it's great that, you know, you're being able to do this, you're still able to train at this level, but this is a hell of a story, like, you know, to have a trainer who's Like 86 this year, if he's not 86 already, to have a horse and still going strong.
Well, I'm delighted to say we've got Aidan back on the line. If you've got any specific questions for him about Leopardstown this weekend?
Yeah, I guess, Aidan, it's great to see that Kevin Kevin Prendergast is probably he's probably the star of the show in some respects with Mad Moon in that Guineas trial. But you've a couple of interesting runners against him as well.
Yeah, no, thanks, Johnny. Yeah, sorry about that. The battery in the laptop ran out there, lads.
No worries.
Sure. We have some runners. We have a horse that won in Nace there, Johnny, running against Kevin's horse. And we have a horse that ran in the same race in Nace. It'll be interesting. Hopefully the ground won't be too soft there. Larkin was expecting there could be kind of 8 or 10 mils of rain tonight, and that'd probably make it close to heavy, you know. So hopefully it won't be too bad, really.
San Andreas is a fascinating horse because I thought he had a lovely run at Nace in his return as well.
Sorry, Johnny, which horse?
San Andreas?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he had a nice run. Ryan rode him. We thought that he would come on from the run. Got a little bit tired, and we've been happy with him since that. Yeah, absolutely.
You look at the elder statesman in racing as well, between them, Jim Bulger. None of them will probably be happy with me kind of calling this, but Jim Bulger, Dermot Well with the four-timer during the week, and Kevin possibly having a classic contender on his hands.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Listen, they're great men. Obviously, Kevin is unbelievable. Dermot and obviously Jim, you know, that's we were very close to for a long time, you know, and still are. So listen, they're unbelievable men, really, and they set the standard all the time and for everybody, really.
Just in the fillies race as well, you obviously have a scatter of runners, and I guess it's kind of starting out the season in terms of them.
Yeah, exactly. They're all fillies that they're kind of unexposed fillies, and it's kind of just a scene where they stand. And if any of them get black print, obviously we will be delighted, Johnny, you know.
Yeah, I was saying before you came back, I just great memories of the Ballysaxons, the Derrenstown, some of the winners that you've had, obviously the likes of Galileo and High Chaparral. Has the race changed in terms of the Epsom narrative for you in recent years? Do you kind of maybe look a bit more to the English races as trials of the likes of Chester, or is it still up there?
I know. The two trials in Ireland are very serious trials. The Ballysaxon and the Derrenstown, they're two absolutely perfect trials for the Derby, and they're in a great position and they're lovely spaced out for the Derby. So, like, we're very lucky to have those two races. If probably for us, they're the races that suit best of all for horses going to Derby, for going to the Derby if you want one or two runs, really.
I know, I get you. And you've two horses by Australia tomorrow and a Sovereign as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Sovereign is a horse that ran an ace in the Burrsford. He won a maiden in Galway, I think, by a long ways in soft ground. So he handles soft ground. And then the other, the horse that Ryan rides is a lovely, lovely relaxed horse.
Broom.
Yeah, Broom. He's a lovely run at in France last year. And the horse that Dunica rides is ran in St. Cloud with a very good run the last day as well. So no, they're lovely horses to look forward to. The Australians are absolutely lovely horses to train. Great minds.
Like their dad?
Yeah, exactly, Johnny. Like his dad, very uncomplicated, you know. So we're looking forward to seeing them run, but they will all improve plenty from their runs, like we think.
Yeah, we were saying, again, when you were cut off, just the role that Galileo has had, like I was always saying, you will leave, obviously, a great legacy in terms of your sons and daughters, but the legacy that he leave as well has to be up there.
Listen, sir, he's an unbelievable horse. Like, he's like the influence he's going to leave on the thoroughbred breed is just going to be, like, at this stage, incalculable, really, like both stallions and dams, you know. So it's the trait is so strong, is mental genuineness and stamina. The traits are so strong, it's incredible, really, and it's going to influence an awful lot of pedigrees for a long, long time.
Because in terms of you've horses that stallions will throw up this and that, but you know, with Galileo, I don't know what it is. He seems to produce very, very similar horses in terms of their mind, temperament, maybe physicality, but also the fact that they obviously want to win, but they've stamina and speed, and obviously they're generally very capable horses. It just seems you could, if you were to design a stallion, you design Galileo.
Yeah, no, I suppose what's very unusual in him is the will to win. It's the mentality that he puts into him, and it's There's no stallion anywhere in the world that does it to the extreme extent that he does. It's just that pure genuineness and toughness and a capacity to cover ground for a long time and keep going, you know. So it's very, very unusual, really.
If I was saying to Gerard that I was struggling to pick the national winner, the Derby winner as well, I find this hard because, Aidan, I have to be honest, I struggle to kind of split your potential contenders at this stage. Maybe Japan might be the one I'd be looking towards. You have Anthony Van Dijk and obviously you have the horse running tomorrow. How are your Derby, potential Derby horses?
Yeah, sure, listen, I suppose we're the same as everybody else. They're all there, thankfully, at the moment, and they're all in full work and they're all nearly ready to run. And obviously, we could only run so many. I suppose then the ground looked like it was going to get heavy tomorrow, so we kind of went a little bit for the horse that might handle soft ground. We're not sure about Ryan's horse, but we think there's a chance that he will. I suppose I'm very happy with them all, really. You named them all there, Johnny, or most of them. So
wintered well?
Yeah, they've wintered well, and physically they look well, and they're doing, and they've done and are doing plenty of work. So the trials are going to be very interesting, we think.
Yeah, it's interesting, because Ryan doesn't really ride at Ballydoyle. Isn't that normally the case?
Yeah, no, he's been over a good bit this year.
Right.
yeah, so more so than any other year. Like, obviously, he hasn't come that much the other years, but he's been with us a lot more this year, Johnny.
He's enjoying the hospitality.
I think so, yeah. Absolutely.
Can I just go back to Galileo? Did you know when you saw him the first time that this was a special horse? Like, or obviously he has to back up being a special horse with the results too, but like the first time you train him, do you remember that? Is that something you're like, ooh, what's this?
Yeah, Jerry, he came from Coolmore, very highly rated horse, kind of the highest rating any horse could really get. And how the lads do that is kind of on physical pedigree and mentality. So the three things are taken into account when the rating is given, and he came with the absolutely top rating. So obviously because of that, he was always looked on as a little bit different. He was trained as a 2-year-old. He'd only one run at the back end, but he was ready to run a few times and didn't run. But he didn't run until a maiden in the back end, and he won his maiden, I think, 14 or 15 lengths, which is very, very rare, very unusual for a 2-year-old to do that. So I suppose he always had that special tag on him, like the whole way from before he came, when he came, and then when he ran and showed what he could do. Listen, it was extra special, really.
When is that rating that you're talking about, is that an actual number that you get passed over?
It is, yeah. It's a number that the lads put on the horses when they come, and like he had the highest, like would be as kind of high on the scale as they really could come. Mm. And he, so obviously he got that from a very early age in Coolmore.
And the older horses this year, who are you most looking forward to? Obviously Kew Gardens sticks out a bit as well.
Yeah, he'll be interesting with Kew Gardens. He'll probably look at the Carnation and maybe a run before that. So yeah, he's done very well physically. Very happy with him, and like he's a horse that handles nice ground. So he could go there, and he could go those races high summer as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that as well, because people don't talk about the progression from 3 to 4 physically, even though it can probably be every bit as, I suppose, important as the 2 to 3.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that's where you can. Some horses can change an awful lot. Sometimes they don't always change from 2 to 3, but if you're going into a 4-year-old, like you can sometimes see a serious progression, really.
Mm. And how, just before you go, I guess, how excited are you about your 2-year-olds?
Yeah, no, happy with them. Well, hopefully we'll have runners maybe next weekend. We were nearly going to run something tonight, so we didn't. We said we'd give them another week. So, no, they're going lovely. Everything they're doing is looks nice at the moment. But like I said, hopefully, I think the Curragh was next weekend, but I think it's moved to Naas, so hopefully we'll have something running there.
Is there any... racing fans, they love to kind of pick out a bit of a puzzle and figure it out.
Yes.
Is there any horse you can give us without naming them, but give us a clue as to a horse to look out for, maybe like some sort of obscure clue or his pedigree or something?
If you want to name him, you can do it too.
For our legion of fans.
In what way?
As a 2-year-old, an unraced 2-year-old.
Oh, you want an unraced 2-year-old?
Don't need his name, but give us a clue.
Yeah, no, listen, there's an American Pharoah horse might run next weekend. Listen, if he runs, keep a good eye on him.
Okay, that's all good. We need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I did have one last question. It's the weekend of the Grand National, and obviously, you know, the early part of your career was festooned with success at National Hunt. Do you miss the National Hunt in or any aspects of it, really?
Actually, we would, yeah, absolutely. We'd watch it and very interested in it all the time. Obviously, we love watching it and seeing all this going on and how strong it has become and developed, you know. So, no, we get great, pleasure of watching it, absolutely.
Yeah. Would you have any intention of going back to it at any point and getting sucked back in?
I suppose at the moment we're very busy and the winters are busy. So I suppose it's to try keep doing what we're doing at the moment anyway.
My final question just is, how is Anna keeping? I know she's been very busy on the training side of things, helping us out.
Yeah, no, good, Johnny. Everything going good. I'm delighted. Anna's a big help to us here and we're obviously delighted to have her here with us.
Listen, thanks a million. You've been great with your time, Aidan.
Yeah, pleasure. Pleasure, Ger. Pleasure, Johnny.
And get a new set of batteries.
Yeah, thanks very much, lads. Appreciate it. Thanks, lads.
So, an unraced 2-year-old from American Pharoah who might run next week.
Yeah, it's really weird to have an American Pharoah. Coolmore obviously procured him, but it's very interesting to have an American Pharoah in Tipperary, really, considering where that horse came from. The one thing I think we can guarantee about him, he'll be over a bet anyway now. Everyone's going to back, probably get the wrong one as well. Aiden will probably run two in the same race and we'll just pick the wrong one. But that's exciting in that, you know, you're looking for these kind of slightly left field stallions maybe in Ireland, because he mentions Glen Eagles and he would be inclined to mention Glen Eagles in the sense that he trained him and obviously he's Coolmore, but he's an exciting stallion as well. But American Pharoah was kind of the, I suppose, has a sex appeal in terms of stallions this year.
Okay, a reminder, of course, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by goracing.ie, and you should check out goracing.ie before you make any of your weekend plans. If you need cards, if you need any information on anything that's going on, check out goracing.ie. We do have to make our bet this week. I just want to get the exact script here. So the Tote Irish Injured Jockeys Charity Fund remains. It says remains at €3,114.44 after mooted effect. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Touched off by your head.
It says failed by a neck at Limerick last Sunday. How you doing, Johnny? Tipping winners over there for us.
Yeah, failed by a neck. Fail again, fail better.
A bit of Samuel Beckett in your life.
Samuel Beckett.
The bookmakers' Nobel winner.
Aidan O'Brien trained a horse called Beckett, if I remember correctly.
This weekend's action comes from Leopardstown on Saturday with Cork and Fairy House on Sunday. Obviously, we're not ignoring the highlights of the jumping calendar, the Aintree Grand National, where Tiger Roll attempts to follow up last year's victory. Remember, you can enjoy the Tote versus SP best price guarantee for all Irish racing, along with the action from Aintree this weekend. Check out thetote.com. What are we backing?
2:35 at Cork on Sunday. The name's Jock, and we mentioned Kevin Prendergast. John Kiley, who trains his horse, at least until recently, and may still be doing this, rides horses out, and I think he's 80 or 81 this year, John Kiley in Waterford. This horse is only having its second run for John, having come from England, and was second to a horse I really like called Cuban Hope, who actually runs this weekend as well, a horse that just a smashing horse. I think he'll take all the beating again this weekend. But he was second to him at Navan, and he's got up 1 pound. And I think he should really take a hell of a lot of beating from a nice draw under, I think, W.J. Lee on Sunday. The name's Jock.
2:35, Cork.
I'll nearly forgive whoever named the horse for not putting in an inverted comma between, you know, the names, Jock, but that's fairly common in racing where
there's no room for the
grammatical abominations.
Is that just to annoy people like you?
I think a lot of people just don't really guess inverted commas. Yeah. There we are.
Apostrophes?
Apostrophes, yeah. Maybe I don't get inverted commas.
You can hear that after from the box.
Yeah, I've just made a fool of myself there. But I've also been tipped whoever Leinster are playing in the handicap tomorrow in the rugby.
Tomorrow,
French team.
No.
Who are Leinster playing tomorrow?
Leinster, the Heidi Cup semi-final. They're a bit away.
Yeah, are they not playing tomorrow against?
It's Guinness Pro 14.
They're playing.
Say that again, John. Better than Treviso.
But yeah, I've been tipped to back Benton Treviso on the handicap. Basically, Treviso will be full strength, have lots to play for. Leinster will be resting a few, nothing to play for.
Okay.
Yeah, so there you are.
Not technically racing part of the Friday Night Racing, but...
Winner's a winner. Johnny, better chance back in Treviso or Benetton than the winner of the National anyway.
Okay, so your tip for the National again, just to remind anybody?
Yeah, Annabelle Fly. I'd love if Tony Martin had the winner of the race. He's a great character, and Barry Geraghty, obviously, as well, come towards the twilight of his career. He's top weight, but with a bit of luck, he has a very good chance, I think.
One of the other big stories, obviously, Faheen retired early from the Aintree hurdle, and it emerged afterwards, had atrial fibrillation. at this stage of a career that Faheen has had, it's unlikely maybe we'll see Faheen again?
Yeah,
Or maybe not?
I'd say he could run at Punchestown. I know if Willie thinks there's any risk within reason of the horse, you know, suffering any sort of ill effects from that run, he will be retired. I mean, he's obviously a horse that you would treat with kid gloves. He's been a bit like that, Faheen, and, you know, he's put in good run, bad run, good run, bad run the last year. He's probably been a little bit hard to figure out, and I'd say more likely than not won't run again, but it'd be nice for him if he were in good shape to rock up at Punchestown for the race he won last year, and a race that looks actually quite winnable this year. I presume Paisley Park won't run it. And I'd love to see him run again. He would literally bring the house down, but, you know, certainly a horse that's very, very fondly remembered by everyone.
OK, one last thing about the flat season. Obviously, we've been following horses all winter long, and we'll stop following them at the end of Punchestown, obviously, which is the season grand finale. How does the flat season work? Is it the same? Is it we should be picking horses now that we think are going to end up and trying to get ahead of the curve on that, or how does that work?
Yeah, like, so, look at... I remember tipping up Kew Gardens to win the Ledger last year. I can't remember when, but he was 33-1 at the time, and he ended up winning it at 3-1 on the day. That seems like a long time ago now, and I mean that in every possible way. But in any event, you can look for horses that you think, like, for especially for the Ledger, like a race the bookies aren't looking at, and look for races maybe the Derby is more a race that they're going to look at. But if you look at the Ledger and say that's a horse that Aidan O'Brien is going to run in that race, he's definitely going to stay. He could be 33-50-1 now, and he could be favourite on the day if he progresses. And Kew Gardens actually was slow to get going as a three-year-old. He's going to run in the Ascot Gold Cup. Look at the Ascot Gold Cup. What do you think is going to run in that race? What do you think is going to run in the Arc there later on in the season? But it's just, there's definitely value there, because not many people right now are backing flats versus anti-post. They're backing for the Grand National, or they're backing this and that. And, you know, basically, in Ireland, Michael Collins probably pioneered the act of guerrilla warfare, and betting is like guerrilla warfare. You have to catch the army off guard. They're always on call, but basically you can hit them whenever you want, and it's up to you. And at this time of the year, the army are a little bit kind of, I'd say, vulnerable to races that they just aren't interested in.
We need to just get lucky once, Mrs. Thatcher. That kind of...
Exactly. And we could do it getting lucky once at the moment.
Yeah, all right. On that note,
in terms of betting, obviously.
On that note, we've got a massive show coming your way later on this month. Ruby Walsh will be joining us in the Alex Hotel in Dublin, live and in Technicolor, on the 24th of April as we preview the grand finale of the jump season, which is obviously the Punchestown Festival. 39 races, including 12 grade ones and €3 million in prize money.
Is the Alex one in town by Stevens Green?
By Marion Square.
Yeah, so there's profound racing connection with Alexander Goldrun, Alexander Banquet, all those horses. Big, big racing connection.
Yeah. The owner owns them both.
O'Callaghan, is this?
Yeah, that's right. You can get your tickets for that show now on offtheball.com. You can stay listening over the next few days, because we will be announcing some more very special guests. Although we started with a biggie, right? Ruby, you can book your tickets now on Punchestown.com. That is the end of Friday Night Racing, and we'll be back next week.
He's been in good form today, Ruby, as well, among the winners.
Yeah. And What's happened?
He's literally, I have to check this, because we've missed a race while we've been on. He obviously won on Kenboy, who was absolutely superb yesterday.
Rom Tome.
And today he has won on Min. Who won the 2.5 mile race. There you go.
All right, well, we missed it, obviously, because we were...
By 20 lengths.
Yeah. Safe for broadcast. Clip. We'll fix that on post. Good night. Hope you enjoyed Friday Night Racing. Stay tuned to all of our social channels, particularly youtube.com/offtheball. Just hit subscribe, and every time we go live, we'll let you know with a little ping to your phone. Thanks.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.